Hello, everyone. We're so glad you could join us today. We are here for the roundtable discussion on a topic of God, the Preserver of Man, the topic for this week. And we are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And thank you all for joining us. We'll begin with the morning prayer.
Reading this watch prayer for the whole household by Mary Baker Eddy. It's found on page 110 of Collectanea. All is love, peace, and harmony. Heaven is right here. Truth reigns. There is no strife. Love has destroyed all hate. All is peace, love, and joy. Run and not be weary. The need of the hour is simplicity, meekness, and obedience. Beloved Father, Mother, God, give me wisdom to meet all the problems that may have to be met today. Give me understanding to rebuke error and moral courage to speak the truth. Give me grace to remain silent when not necessary to speak. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. All right, Karen.
Watch number 328. Watch that you hold as your goal, giving your patient an embodiment rather than a staff healing. This contrast is drawn from 2 Kings 4, where Elisha's servant was told to place the latter's staff upon the face of the dead son of the Shunammite woman, to no avail. Then Elisha threw himself on the boy and restored him. Had the servant learned the letter of truth from Elisha without embodying it for himself? The fact that the servant used Elisha's staff would indicate that he was leaning on Elisha's demonstration. Elisha's throwing himself on the child, mouth to mouth, eye to eye, etc., calls to mind the way a fire is put out with a blanket. The blanket completely cuts off the supply of oxygen that enables it to keep burning. A blanket or embodiment treatment, therefore, would appear to be one that did more than attempt to destroy the one error from which the patient is suffering. It must symbolize the effort to spiritualize the entire picture by releasing the patient from the sense of matter or the belief in a material mind.
Thank you very much. It's a good explanation of this story this week. Okay, comments?
Well, I found page 369 was citation 12 in Science and Health. I called it the embodiment treatment based on the, where she says in proportion, begins with, I won't read the whole thing, but in proportion as matter loses to human sense, all entity is man, in that proportion does man become its master.
Thank you. Anyone else? It's, you know, prayer and fasting. This is suffocating the error and pouring in flood tides of love. And that's what we do. And we have to shut out all the error, all the voices that would make us afraid, alarmed, or whatever else, and stay with what we know to be God's truth.
When we ask, when we allow the flood tides of love to take over, there's no space for error, and we don't concentrate on error, so we point out that it has no power, no place, it has no existence.
Thank you.
And also, I think what came to me, and I've read one commentary that also identifies that, it's like the he is identifying correctly the whole being, not just part of it, but the whole being. Well, Mrs. Eddy says, man is the embodiment of right ideas. So the whole, you know, not just part, but the whole being. And I feel that's why sometimes even when you're healing something or other things get healed and you don't even think about them, but the whole, you take the whole thing, and that's what Elisha was supposedly doing, covering the whole being. Yeah.
Thank you. And that's the glory of a Christian Science treatment. It does. It heals you. Heart, mind, soul, everything gets healed. And maybe not in the order that you particularly want it, mm-hmm. but it'll all come. And that's what that beautiful psalm, the Lord will perfect that which concerns me. So when you get Christian Science treatment or when you're working yourself, all of these things are being perfected in your life everywhere. As Florence said, even things you didn't think about, or you're not asking for help, you're just concentrated on this one thing you want healed. But no, it's the entire being that gets healed. And it's wonderful. It's not like the medical where they just heal the physical. Everything gets healed.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Florence.
No, I said how morally, you know, sometimes morally too, we are healed. You come out and it's like, wow, you know, I don't want to do this anymore that I used to do, things like that. Yeah.
Most definitely. Yes. Moral, spiritual, everything, emotional.
Well, and it has to be that way, doesn't it? Because it's all intertwined. And isn't this a good lesson for patients calling on a practitioner? How many people, yeah. when they call on a practitioner, kind of expect the practitioner to do the work that they themselves, as a so-called patient, are required to do? Can a patient really rely on a practitioner to do the work that they have to do? Because when we call on a practitioner, what are we really doing?
Calling on the Christ.
Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are asking for help to get closer to God, so that we can hear God, so that we can do God's will, so that we can open our hearts to God, who is the great master physician.
That's why it's so important that no part of this remain magical in your thinking. I know I have found that in the past. You know, my practitioner had given me things, and when she stated this truth, it worked for me. But when I tried to do it myself without understanding, it did not work. It was a staff healing, I guess. You know, so how important it is to truly understand, so you can get to that point.
Yeah, thank you.
I think it's also quite a bit of receptivity and readiness from the Shunammite woman, who I think in past discussion somebody said that she is a natural Christian Scientist. She believed, you know, that this, well, I'll go to the man of God and see what he can do, because she already had the receptivity of what Elisha was to do.
Yes, thank you. Well, and asking practitioner for help, I mean, that is a humble step, realizing you need help and you are going to the Christ. So that humble step and that humility can open the door to healing. And Mrs. Evans always said it was always a duet. You can't count on the practitioner to do everything. You must do your part as well and listen to whatever you're being told to do, and take it as if the Christ was speaking. Don't start arguing or even saying, oh, I do that all the time. Well, if you're doing that all the time, why are you calling for help? What's that? So
Yeah. And another point is that Elijah, when he tried other possibilities, he had the humility to completely get into the situation to cause the healing. You know, he didn't say, well, I tried everything, so sorry. He completely went all out, and then the healing took place.
Yes. Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I also love how the Shunammite woman realized that her child came from God.
Yes.
You know, it was God who brought that child, you know, through Elisha, you know, who told her into her life. And so it was to God that she went for the resolution of this, rather than just accepting, oh, he's passed on at face value. She's like, well, he came from God, so I'm going to go to God for this answer.
Thank you. A very important point.
Yeah, I always feel like she's, you know, her saying it as well, that she's saying, if there's malpractice here, it's definitely not me. I am not the malpractice.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Go ahead.
Oh, she was saying she was receptive too. She was open and expecting.
Yes.
It to right. work.
And, you know.
Your booty says.
What would say?
Expectancy of good is something Christian Science so wonderful.
Right. My expectancy is from the Lord. You have to expect the healing. If you're full of all this doubt and fear, it doesn't help. So, and you know, this is why too, I tell people, when if someone comes to you needing help, you should help them, because otherwise you'll always be the servant with a stick. You've got to start doing it yourself and practicing this yourself and digging deeper, and not just, oh, well, I've got somebody else I can count on. No. And I've heard stories of, you know, people who are just devastated when their practitioner dies. What are they ever going to do? I should say passes on, graduates, or whatever you want to call it. But, this is where you have to learn to do it yourself. We all are practitioners. That's why we call it the practice of Christian Science. It's a practice that we do. And when you need help, definitely get help. But start working it yourself. Again, Carrie sending beautiful articles. She sent a couple on the Shunammite woman. One was from a topical encyclopedia, and it said that the Shunammite woman is described as a wealthy and hospitable individual who provided a room for Elisha whenever he passed through the area in gratitude. And this account highlights themes of faith, hospitality, and divine intervention. And then later it says the Shunammite woman's interaction with Elisha demonstrates the blessings that come from faith and hospitality, while the revival of her son serves as a testament to God's power over life and death. Shunem, therefore, stands as a testament to the intertwining of everyday life with divine purpose, showcasing how God works through ordinary people and places them to fulfill his plans. There was I only caught just a little bit of this YouTube, but it was very interesting about some woman. I don't know what was happening to her, whether it was a terrorist attack or home invasion or something, but her life was being threatened by someone. And it must have been in her home, because the person then saw a picture of her as a child with her mother. And the person who was going to kill her said, I know that woman, meaning her mother, and that she helped me a long time ago. She gave me food and clothing when I needed it. So he didn't hurt this woman because of that. And the woman was crying, telling the story, saying it was the goodness of her mother years ago that saved her life that very day. So I guess the point is, and my point is, you never know the goodness you express, the ripples effect it has, and how it does go down through the ages. You just never know. And God does have plans and purposes. And when your heart is right, you will be. He is the preserver of you. and all will be well. Now, also this very lovely article, it was called The Secret Place of the Most High by Henrietta Marcus. And it talks about, we read how this woman perceived that Elisha was a holy man of God. But it brings out the point, why didn't anybody else perceive that? This woman perceived it. What was it that enabled her to do this? And said she alone gave him bread and shelter, though he must have passed many homes in his wanderings. The little chamber built on the wall may typify the Shumanite's desire for goodness, for something beyond the material experiences of her daily life. She built this place to shelter the best she knew. It was a certain spirituality of thought that enabled her to perceive a truth that was a dead letter to those around her, and to appreciate the worthiness of the prophet. There are many similar references in the Bible, especially in Psalms, to the uplifting of thought into a specially prepared sanctuary, such as the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me. In the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me. Thou art my hiding place. But there is no more poetic rendering of the escape from the turmoil of mortal thought than that which describes the refuge prepared for Elisha by the Shumanite. The same idea is given in the history of Noah, when God commanded him to construct the ark so that it might rise above the turmoil of evil thought and conscious wickedness. And we see from the story how Noah and his family and all that entered the sanctuary were guarded and protected from the angry waters that surged around them. The voice of God can always be heard if we but listen with the ear of spiritual understanding, and we have the choice either to enter into the sanctuary of spiritual thinking where there is safety, or to stay outside the sanctuary and be tossed about by the waves of human opinion and mortal thought. Much the same thing was expressed by Jesus when he said, "But thou, when thou goest, enter into thy closet. And when thou hast shut the door, pray to thy Father which is in secret." It is only by withdrawal into the sanctuary, by shutting out the glamour and glare of mortal belief, that we can hope to realize the presence of God. We all have our little sanctuaries, and they are filled according to our different mental states, but are not always prepared for the reception of a prophet. It is only as we destroy our belief in the reality of evil that we can enter into that secret place of the Most High, into the ark, defined by Mrs. Eddy in Science and Health, quote, "the understanding of spirit destroying belief in matter," end quote. In the continuation of the tale of the Shumanite, we see how her faith in the man of God, the man overcome in that little sanctuary, constructed to protect the holiest thought, made manifest to her. So I thought that was so beautiful. We all have our sanctuaries to enter. We must keep them pure and undefiled, and knowing the allness of God and the unreality of evil. And in that sanctuary, whatever, wherever it is, it's in your consciousness, you can call on God. You know, the chapter on prayer tells us that. I love it. We have audience with spirit. It always gives me chills, Mrs. Eddy says. So remember that, and you take it with you. You're never without it, whether you're on a busy city street or in the beautiful countryside, wherever you are, or in a dangerous position, wherever you are, your sanctuary is with you, the sanctuary of God, and you can enter it at any time and find the peace and the safety that you seek. And if you know it well enough, it'll also bless others as well. So, a beautiful story. It keeps unfolding more and more beautiful things, right?
One other thing I wanted to mention too about the, and I don't know, I don't, I'm
sure I'm not the only Christian Scientist that has been told this, but said, well, you keep everything so secret. You know, you don't tell anybody what's going really going on with you. And like when she was asked, is everything okay? Is your son? She said, it is well. It is well. She knew that there was nothing to talk about with anybody until she met the one who could do something about it to help her. But everybody else, it would just be bringing up. So in my life, sometimes my family, sometimes, or not anymore, but they would say, oh, you're so private. You don't talk about what's going on with you. And I thought, well, there's no need to. What? If I need some help, I'm going to talk to a practitioner. I'm not going to, you know, tell others what's going on with me. And anyway, I thought that was an important point, too, in the story.
It is, and it's very, very true. And I see it sometimes, you know, people, they have all these friends and they chit chat and talk about, I don't know, troubles they're having at home. And
it's called an organ recital.
Yeah. And they amplify it. Then they put these pictures in other people's minds and they think, oh, poor Tilly. Problems. And then you get sympathetic malpractice. There's something in me that won't that says no. Don't do that. Don't go there.
But then he tells us not to hold error long enough to repeat it to somebody else.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good one.
That's good. Yeah.
And getting all the human opinions.
Exactly.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And fears and all that.
And what?
And they're fears for you.
Oh, yes.
If you make them, they'll start getting afraid for you. And that's the last thing anybody needs on them is somebody else being fearful for you.
Yes. Yep. Yes.
Or saying stuff that would make people think that you are doubting Christian Science or that they should doubt Christian Science. Mm-hmm. And then later on being surprised when they do because you said that.
So, yeah. You know, Pandora's box, can of worms. don't go there. So be wise. Yeah, if you need help, you know where to get help. And you know with a practitioner, it'll be sacred. It won't be gossip and it'll be healing. And of course, practitioner will always turn you to God for your decisions. So thank you.
I think that also all this points to how we've been taught that the statements of truth, as wonderful as they are just to get our own thought in line with that connection to God that you have when you earnestly just turn to God and ask Him. But the statements in themselves, I think with the story of Elisha and the watching point, it was saying that's kind of like the dead letter. It's not just the statements of truth. It's the truth behind them, and that's God. And so that's the wonderful part when we can just put those down for a minute and just listen and get it straight from the source. And it's just so wonderful when you can do that, because I used to rely heavily on those statements, and now I try to at least 25 times a day just turn and listen to God.
Good, thank you. If you're too busy even declaring statements, sometimes you can't hear them. You've got to be quiet. Yeah. Maybe he has something different to say. And yes, and he's always there. His angels are always with you. No, always.
And you're right. If you go no farther than just reading the letter, you're likely to end up mesmerizing yourself, thinking that you've accomplished something when you haven't. You're right. I mean, that's tuning the violin, right? This is it. Once you've got a tune, it's time to play it. And that is to practice the science.
Mary had read something a long time ago that had the term dead letterism in it. And I think of that a lot. Like, you got to stay away from that dead letterism.
Yeah. Yeah, you will. It's called self-mesmerism. You think you're doing, and you're not really. And that's why, too, I know Florence gets this, too. Oh, I've read that. Well, maybe you've read it.
But where's the spirit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The application
Exactly. Just like a math book, you can read all about it, but if you've never worked out a problem, then what good is it? You've got to work that problem out. So, all right, Shardy, you sent me something this week. You can.
This is from Genesis, 16. Thou God seest me. And then I found an article, The God Who Sees Me, by Dr. James Merritt. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. That's Psalm 139. And then a woman named Hagar first used the name, and it is El Roy. And she said, when God met her in her distress, she said, "You are the God who sees me. I have now seen the one who sees me." And that's Genesis 16. This phrase, "the God who sees me," is translated, as I said, as El Roy in Hebrew. El Roy is the God who numbers the hairs on our heads and counts our every ear. He knows every detail of our circumstance. King David also knew God as El Roy, according to the Psalm 139. He understood just how all-seeing God is nothing, that God sees not only what is, but also what will be. He will form and fashion every detail of our being. When we trust Christ and our eyes are opened in faith, for the first time, we clearly see God. And then I love the little prayer he said. Dear God, thank you for seeing me just as I am and loving me fully and completely. Thank you for also seeing what I can be in Christ and transforming me into the image of your Son. It is such a comfort to know that no matter what has happened, it is happening or will happen, you will see it all and you are in control. Help me to trust you more and more each day. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a beautiful short little passage there. Thou God seest me. How much he loves us. He knows us. Never doubt that. That's those of you that watch The Chosen, it's often a bit of a theme in there, isn't it, how Christ would see these people, see their needs, and meet them with great tenderness and love, as he does with us.
His eyes on the sparrow. So.
Thank you. That's so beautiful. I love that song. His eyes on the sparrow, and I know he watches me. Right. All right, Karen.
Okay, I found this commentary, the Benson commentary, and it was on Lamentations 3, 24 to 26. But the word portion, the Lord is my portion, saith my soul. Therefore will I hope in him. I looked up the word portion and got some commentary. It said ultimate source of happiness, security, and inheritance. But Benson commentary on this says, the Lord is my portion, saith my soul. An interest in the favor and love of God and his presence with me, my heart tells me, is the best inheritance. And possessing these, I have that which is sufficient to balance all my troubles and make up all my losses. For while portions on earth are empty and perishing things, God is an all-sufficient and durable portion, a portion forever. Therefore will I hope in him. I will stay myself upon him and encourage myself in him when all other supports and encouragements fail me. Observe, reader, it is our duty and interest to make God the portion of our souls, and then to enjoy and take comfort in him as such. in the midst of afflictions and lamentations. The Lord is good unto them that wait for him, to them that patiently wait his time, when he will judge it a proper season to afford them comfort and deliverance, and who, in the meanwhile, apply themselves to him by prayer and humiliation. It is good. It is our duty and will be our unspeakable comfort and satisfaction that a man should hope and quietly wait, to hope that it will come, though the difficulties that lie in the way of it seem insuperable, to wait till it does come, though it be long delayed, and while we wait to be quiet and silent, not quarreling with God or making ourselves uneasy, but acquiescing in the divine disposal.
Very beautiful. Thank you. I really have nothing to add to that. That says it so well. If anyone else, but it's a wonderful thought that, you know, God is my portion, an abundant portion. Everything we could possibly need. He said he'll balance all my troubles and make up for all my losses. And the portions on earth are empty and perishing, but God is an all-sufficient, durable portion. So, beautiful explanation of that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, now, Nancy.
Yes, good morning. God, not human devices, are the preserver of man. I found thee in the 1828. I know we've had this before, but it's always good to refresh. To preserve means to keep or to save from injury or destruction. To defend from evil. To uphold. To sustain. To save from decay. To keep in a sound state. So I always love to go to Prose Works and see what Mrs. Eddy has to say. And on the preserver of man, she writes, God, not human devices, the preserver of man. God's spirit is indeed the preserver of man. Then in the words of the Hebrew singer, quote, why art thou cast down, O my soul? And why art thou disquieted within me? Hope thou in God, for I shall yet praise him, who is the health of my countenance and my God, who forgiveth all thine iniquities, who healeth all thy diseases. This being the case, what need have we of drugs or hygiene and medical therapeutics if these are not man's preservers? Can a single quality of God's spirit be discovered in matter? The scriptures plainly declare, the Word was God, and all things were made by him, the Word. What then can matter create, or how can it exist? And that was in Christian Science versus Pantheism from Prose Works.
Very beautiful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I loved it.
Yes, what our leader says. Indeed. God is the preserver of man, and it is. We search for our help in so many other ways than this one way, which answers all our troubles, everything, whatever your problem is. So remember that, and don't waste your time with reading a lot of Bushwa. As Mrs. A would say. So that's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, in that, and also in what Karen read, it speaks about how we encourage ourselves in the Lord. And I've always loved, there's a story in the Bible about David who lost everything. He and his men returned from battle and found that their city had been invaded and burned. Their wives, sons, and daughters had been taken captive. And David was greatly distressed, as you can imagine. His men were distraught and weeping. But at this critical moment, David encouraged himself in the Lord. David prayed to God and asked him for guidance. Shall I pursue after this troop? Shall I overtake them? And God answered, pursue, for thou shalt surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. And that's what David did, and that's exactly what happened. And there was nothing lacking to them, neither small nor great, neither sons nor daughters, neither spoil nor anything that had taken to them. David recovered all. David, because he was open and in the right mind, not the human mind. If he'd been in the human mind, he said, oh, he would be crying like everybody else was. And what should I do? And oh my gosh, this is just terrible. And you have to be your best friend, not your worst enemy. So he encouraged himself and not said, oh, you really screwed up now. Why'd you leave when you did? And blah, blah, or whatever else comes to people, comes to me. But he encouraged himself. And because he did this, he did recover all. And then in Edward Kimball states in his book and lectures and articles, and I love this, and I think about it a lot. Be not afraid. You can be a law unto yourself, a law of recovery from disease, a law to your business, a law of harmony to your welfare and your own household and all things in your life, because God gave man dominion and you are entitled to it. In this very hour, you are entitled to be a law of recovery to your own self. Isn't that wonderful? In this very hour,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Whatever you think you've lost, encourage yourself in God. And then Carrie sent an article called Encouraging Ourselves in God by Ella Hoag, which refers to that story also. And it also refers to the statement in Science and Health in our lesson this week that I also love. The divine mind that made man maintains his own image and likeness. That goes along with the word preserve. But in order to maintain, it means to hold, to preserve, or keep in any particular state or condition, to support, not to suffer, not to fail, or to decline, to maintain the digestive process, to maintain the fertility of soil, not to lose or surrender, to support by intellectual powers, to defend, and to vindicate. Those are all the things that God does when he maintains us, maintains our image and likeness, his image and likeness. Think about it. It's wonderful. And even just thinking about what it is to be his image and likeness. And then Ella Hoag says, do we feel disturbed lest we should not triumph over some error of belief, that in some way we should fail to honor God by not triumphing in his name? There stands the invincible assurance that God maintains his own image and likeness. Do sickness and sin with their myriad suppositious illusions try to argue presence, power, and reality? There is the all-encouraging truth that since God in his own individuality is eternal, immortal, and harmonious, and is imparting and perpetuating these qualities in man, it inevitably follows that man must eternally and uninterruptedly express these qualities. And they're pouring forth. And that goes to another quote from Mrs. Eddy, where it says that that God imparts and perpetuates these qualities in man through mind, not matter. So all good is being poured forth to you if, as we said earlier, you are receptive to that good. So anyway, I love that. And it's something to think about. These are the things we think about, not the error, but the truth, because the truth is all powerful and will always outshine any error.
But notice one thing. Go ahead.
I would like to testify, I guess, to this point. There was a time when there were so many challenges and a very aggressive suggestion where it seems that it was lost at least 4 or 5 things. And I was in prayer, and then what is all this? And, you know, just trying to see the truth. And that passage came to me so clear. It says, you will recover all. Wow, that brought me so much peace. And very soon, everything was recovered. I mean, this, and that, all the five things that seemed to be gone, they all were recovered and all came. It's so powerful, that spiritual truth.
Thank you.
And just remember one very important thing, where it says the divine mind that made man maintains his own image and likeness. The divine mind does not maintain mortal man or mortal beliefs. He only maintains his own image and likeness. So if we're trying to ask God to maintain something that is not godlike, forget it.
Yeah, good. Very good.
Yeah, that's what we have to wake up to. Wake up to the good that has already been made. It's not some changing something. Being awake to what God has already made. That's changeless.
Thank you.
Which is why we have to have the positive expectation, but it has to be an expectation that is guided by God, and an expectation in God, not an expectation in anything else.
I was thinking about what you just read, Mary, about how David encouraged himself and God. And I was just thinking, you know, sometimes you get to the end of your rope, and I don't remember who it was who told me this. I heard it here, but they're like, you know, what do you do when you get to the end of the rope?
You tie
a knot.
Yeah.
Yeah. You tie a knot and you hold on.
Yeah. That's and big. Yeah.
I feel like that is a kind of what David did. To him, thou shalt have no other gods before me was very evident. You know, there was no other avenue, you know, that he was going to turn to. And it was very evident there. And that takes a lot of moral courage to do, you know, what he did. And then I realized that's exactly what the Shunammite woman had done as well. That those two actually tie together. That's how she responded as well.
Thank you. That's very, very true. Very good. Yes, indeed. The moral courage to do and to recognize the truth when it's being spoken, and to recognize, as we talked about in the beginning, Elisha. She recognized who and what it was. And blessed are those who can. Blessed are the eyes that see, right? As Jesus said.
And yeah. I'm sure a good historian will corroborate that every great important event that ever happened in history was the result of one or more persons tying the knot and hanging on and never giving up.
Yes.
On God.
Yeah. Now, I was very excited and happy to see, because Carrie sent me one other article by William McCracken. Health is a fact. And it goes with a statement in Science and Health that I love. And you think about, again, very often, health is not a condition of matter, but of mind. Nor can the material senses bear reliable testimony on the subject of health. Health is not a condition of matter, but of mind, with a capital M. That is such an important point to understand. And in this article, McCracken says, Christian Science, actually it's a lecture, Christian Science proves that health is an entity, a state of consciousness, it is a positive fact. Like holiness, like happiness, health is a spiritual and mental quality, and like them, is to be derived from a right understanding of God. In order to find the truly Christian and scientific concept of health, let us turn to the scriptures. Christian Science bases its testimony wholly upon the scriptures. In them we find that David spoke of as the health of his countenance. He also referred to God's saving health among all nations. Again, he says that it is the Lord who forgiveth all thine iniquities and who healeth all thy diseases. The prophet Isaiah declared concerning the result of true repentance, which is, of course, a spiritual or mental change, thine health shall speed forth speedily. And then coming to the New Testament, we find that Jesus understood this as well. But how often, whenever you're sick, you look to matter, you look to the body, trying to heal the body, it is a condition of mind. And if you watch your thinking and stay out of the human mind, you will not get sick. And I know that. I know it from my own experience. It's a state. Thank you. And it's just like any other quality of God. It's given to you. Health is derived from God. Just like he listed holiness, other things, they come from God. It's yours, your divine right, as a daughter or the son of the king. In Bigdal Young's article, in Science, he states, even a harmonious human body is not necessarily expressing health. Health is more than the absence of disease. Health is the eternal state of spiritual being. So, my friends, if you want to be healthy, wealthy, and wise, well, if you're healthy, then you watch your thought. Mrs. Eddy says that, watch your thought, not your body. And if you have been indulging in mortal mind thinking for a long period of time, your body might seem to be a little carrying on about it. But that's change. You change it. It's like pulling a machine that's been buried in the mud. You got to pull it out and clean it off and get it going again. So you start by thinking the right thoughts, getting yourself out of that human mind, negative, depressing, fearful, hateful, whatever else thinking, and get yourself on track again. It might take you a while to get out of it because it took you a while to get into it. Mrs. Evans used to say that to us. That's not to discourage you, but it's to keep you going on the straight and narrow way of health. It's a divine, given to you divinely by God. So cherish it and watch your thinking so you don't have to have it, because you don't.
Thank you. Thank you. And that reminds me of that great article, The Great Necessities to Keep You Watch. And also, in reality, in the absolute, there is no end of the rope, really, right? This is all in mortal thinking. And it reminds me also of that great article, so important, the absolute and the relative.
Yes. Yeah, no, there's really no end of the rope, but it can certainly seem like it in human experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then throw in the towel. You tie a knot and hang on, which is most important.
Yeah, man's extremity is God's opportunity.
Yes. So, in a lovely Max Dunaway poem, he says, I said to my heart, go out and find the richest treasures of the mind. It answered me, you have them there, a joyous song, a humble prayer. And look, this is called attitude. Look, if this peace should fail, this pleasant land become a place where only vultures could exist. Let me be found holding my brother's hand, not facing him with clenched and icy fist. So, and now we will have to end, I guess. And I have several things to end on. It's hard to decide. But we will end on this one by Duncan Sinclair.
And this is the article entitled, He Shall Give His Angels Charge Over Thee. He writes, in a short article on angels in Miscellaneous Writings, page 307, Mrs. Eddy identifies them with God's spiritual ideas. Quote, God gives you his spiritual ideas, end quote, she writes, and in turn they give you daily supplies. Here, angels are actually referred to as giving us our daily supplies. And the language is not merely that of people poetic imagery. It is a true statement of what takes place in human experience when one, in the secret place of the Most High, becomes conscious of truth, of God's spiritual ideas. Not only is protection to be found there from sickness and sin, from evil beliefs of every kind, but also the daily supplies. That is the way spiritual understanding blesses even the human sense of existence. Quote, "Behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened that it cannot save," end quote, saith the prophet. And Paul, after exhorting the Corinthians to avoid idolatry, continues, "I will receive you and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty." Paul was telling them about an angel, about God's love, which comes to those who do his will, the love of the Father to his sons and daughters. It is no difficult thing for the spiritualized consciousness to summon the angels of God. They are ever present, because God is ever present. But for us to recognize them, we need to conform to God's law, which inculcates purity, humility, and love. Otherwise, we are not ready to receive and welcome them. The angels of his presence, the spiritual intuitions that tell us when the night is far spent, the day is at hand, are our guardians in the gloom. Science and Health, page 174. We can always depend upon these angels. Divine principle has endowed them with omnipotent power, and they are with us the moment we realize man's indissoluble unity with God good.
We all have a sober responsibility now to be praying for our nation and our world. We can summon these angels, and they come to comfort, guard, and guide, as our hymn says, and they go throughout the world to accomplish God's will and to right all wrongs and bring in peace and love where there seems to be other things. So thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.